Mrs. Schaafsma, Mr. Royce.
May I proceed?
Yep.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please this honorable court and counsel to the government. My name is Thomas Royce. I represent Bernard Schaafsma, who's presently serving a term in custody of the Bureau of Prisons on the conviction that attached pursuant to the finding and jury's verdict before Her Honor, Judge Pallmeyer. The purpose of my proceeding here this morning is a single, isolated instance, and that concerns the effectiveness of the trial court's order quashing the defendant's arrest at 159th and LaGrange Road, based upon her determination that the arrest by the officers, the DEA task force, was an unconstitutional seizure and invasion of Mr. Schaafsma. We cited five issues that we believe this court should determine were improperly admitted at the trial of this case in support of our motion after the court determined that our motion was valid and his arrest was illegal. The things that I had argued to the court and argue today is that if the exclusionary rule still is in existence in relation to Fourth Amendment violations and the notion of long sun being the fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine is still applicable, then the things that were arrested, the things that were seized as a result of his arrest in the parking lot and on the public street at 159th and LaGrange Road should have been excluded from the jury's consideration. I specifically refer to the testimony, which is the only way those things could have been brought to the jury's attention, and I specifically refer to his presence in the parking lot at the time of the alleged drug deal. And
but all of that occurred before the arrest.
It occurred, yes, Your Honor, but I believe it was as a result of the arrest that those things came to light.
But the point of the matter is, if you exclude the fruit of the poison tree, that has to start with the bad arrest, not before.
Right, and I agree, sir. Yes, Your Honor, I agree. But the thing is this blue Toyota where he's driving the vehicle.
Yeah, but that was the observation of the blue Toyota and the conversation that occurred before, all occurred before the arrest.
Right.
And so that's what you want to exclude, though.
No, what I want excluded is the events that occurred after the arrest, which related to the blue Toyota and his presence at the scene. That evidence would not have come about but for the original arrest, Your Honor, and I'm saying that it's a...
What evidence would that have come
his presence at the His presence at the scene of this alleged...
Before the arrest?
Well, I guess my answer is that, yes, the actual arrest and detention occurred right out on the street.
It occurred after he left the parking lot.
That's correct.
So his presence at the parking lot and all the implications therein occurred before the arrest.
That's correct. And
so
that
there can't be the fruit of a poison tree because the arrest is what you're kicking
right.
about.
That's correct.
Okay.
But, Your Honor, then the officers were permitted to testify about his presence at the scene of the arrest, the blue Toyota being seen at the scene of the arrest.
Before the arrest.
Well, at the scene of... Yes,
at
Your Honor.
At the scene of the first arrest. Go ahead.
Right.
Anyhow, apart from the fact that you must have been surprised when the judge ruled in your favor on the motion to suppress.
In 32 years, Your Honor. Yeah. In 32 years in practicing in this court and other courts, I was very surprised that Judge Pallmeyer ruled in the fashion she did.
Yeah.
I believed we had made an appropriate case, but it was the first motion that I'd ever had granted in this district. And
I tell you what,
so you can imagine
In 51 years of, 52 years now of practicing law, I had never seen one like that either, so the two of us can share the shock surprise.
Thank you, sir. I went home and I told several people about my success. But I think, Your Honor,
kissed you on both cheeks.
Yes, Your Honor.
Suppress the evidence, but let it all in anyhow.
That's correct, Your Honor. And that is essentially my argument, is that everything that occurred subsequent to the arrest, and the distinction is that the government was then able to introduce the testimony of the officer's observation of this blue Toyota, which corroborated the thing that occurred before that. I think, Your Honor, that...
It's a pyrrhic victory you had. At the beginning. You won, but you lost. But there you
yes,
go.
Your Honor. That is. But I do believe that was material and an essential element in this case because the phone records and the testimony of Mr. Morella that the government relied upon and which were really the essential elements in this case were really only the only evidence that would have connected the defendant to the crime, and the phone records and the testimony of Mr. Morella was extremely questionable and suspect. So it is those five things that I suggest the court. The observations of the officer. Now, the last point that I made in five is the identification testimony of the defendant as being the one in the blue Toyota, and I realize that that is a stretch of some sort, but it seems to me that the circumstances surrounding that particular events at the scene, the entire evidence
what
of that event...
What I don't understand, though, about your case, if police at a scene of an arrest, if the police observe someone speeding off, is it entirely reasonable for them to stop the person? Even if they don't suspect him of a crime, you know, he may be an important witness.
Well, I don't think the speed was the issue. The testimony was he went to the driveway, went to the left, went to the right. I think speeding is certainly a proper basis for a police officer to detain or stop a citizen or anyone.
I mean speeding in the sense of exceeding the speed limit, but I thought the evidence was that the blue Toyota, whatever it was, left the parking lot very quickly, right at the same time as the arrest. And so the police might think either the person was involved or the person was a witness, might be useful to get his name and stop him for that purpose.
Well, I think that the court ruled and heard the evidence that that was in the circumstances.
No, I understand, but we're supposed to make a de novo judgment about probable cause.
Well, I think this case, not the fact that he was moving out of the parking lot and at a rate of speed.
But as I say, why isn't it perfectly reasonable, that's what probable cause is, why isn't it perfectly reasonable for the police to stop someone who is at the minimum, a potential witness of a criminal transaction?
Well, they didn't stop him for the purpose. They stopped him to arrest him.
Which is why you were so shocked.
Yes, sir. But, I mean, their intention was not to question him or to identify or ask him or Terry stop. They pulled guns and ran out in the street, and it was a very high-level, dramatic, forceful arrest. I think an officer could certainly stop someone and ask him questions, and under Terry, if he had, if there was some suspicion. But this was, Your Honor, I don't think this was that kind of case. I don't quarrel with the proposition that he could stop someone if somebody said there's a homicide or there's a crime. That guy Roy Staw to go stop him. He's in a blue Cadillac or blue Toyota or blue Pontiac. I don't see any problem with that. But that wasn't this. They ran out on the street with guns because they said he was part of this case when there was no reason to believe that he was part of this case.
Well, suppose they just stopped him as a material witness or something. Would that have led to the same consequences?
No, sir. That would not have had the same consequences because, I mean, the police officers, in my opinion, would have been justified in doing that if that was the purpose of their stop. If he had not stopped and proceeded on, you get the driver's license plate or whatever, but the authority they were exercising, I think the record reflects that the motion was that six or so officers ran out with the guns, pulled him out of the car before they did anything else, before they interrogated him, put him on the street, and patted him down and searched him, etc.
The issue is whether they had a right to arrest.
That is my thought,
yeah.
Your Honor.
You're running into your rebuttal time.
I thank you very much for your time. It's always a pleasure to appear before this honorable court. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Roy.
You fib pretty good, too, Tom. I see you fib pretty good, too, Tom.
Ms. Haley?
Good morning, Your Honor. The first issue, which is obviously raised in our brief, is that there was probable cause in this case, and therefore all the evidence surrounding the arrest.
Your first position is that Judge Pallmeyer made a mistake when she held it was in. That you start with that one, you can work out of the next one slowly.
That's correct. It is the government's position that the district court erred, and that there was probable cause in this case. Not just his fleeing from the scene, but before that, Mr. Morella saying to the undercover officer, my partner is here, gesturing to an area in the parking lot where Officer Recker was able to observe a blue Toyota sitting without other cars around, with a single individual pointed in the direction towards the transaction that was taking place.
Without even the pointing, if he said, my guy is in the lot, then the car leaves.
At high speed.
At high speed or pulls out at that time.
I agree. And as we've cited in the Burrell case, which is similar where there was no gesturing or pointing, they simply had talked about their partners showing up and then a car shows up with a Chicago sticker on it and in an area where they could observe what was going on. This court found that was enough for probable cause. Even if this court was not to find that there was probable cause, the five facts that the appellant lists out are properly admissible. The first three, as Judge Bauer, as you pointed out, occurred before any arrest happened. They're observations by the police officers. Officer Recker testified that he observed a blue Toyota sitting there well before any arrest happened. Officer Lietzau testified that he observed this blue Toyota speed out of the parking lot, again, before the arrest occurred. And the third fact Officer Recker told Officer Lietzau that the blue Toyota was involved, again, something that a statement that caused Officer Lietzau to take a certain action, but again, well before the arrest occurred. The fourth fact that the appellant raises is that Officer Lietzau ran after the blue Toyota and cut it off. An action that Officer Lietzau took, again, was not the result of the arrest.
Do I remember correctly, he stepped in front of the car?
That's correct, Judge.
Not going to last long if he keeps up that good work. I mean.
Well, you also make an argument, don't you, that even observations made after the illegal arrest are admissible?
That's correct. Well, if I could clarify that, it's the fifth point, and that is that the appellant raises that the in-court identification by Officer Lietzau was not properly admissible and was the result of the arrest. However, it's the government's argument that that identification and observations at the time of arrest are properly admissible. And
I don't understand that argument at all. Why is that any different from any other proof?
Well, first, the government would point to INS versus Lopez Mendoza, where the Supreme Court said that the body or identity of a defendant...
I think you misunderstand that. I think what it means is that even though there's an illegal arrest, you can still prosecute a person. That is, he can't say, well, if you hadn't arrested me illegally, you never would have caught me. He wouldn't know how I was, so you couldn't prosecute me. That's very different from saying that evidence of identity that's obtained after the after some illegal arrest can be used as evidence against evidence of guilt.
I understand, and that's the position that the Eighth Circuit has taken with regard to the interpretation of that case. However, I would point to the Ninth Circuit case, U.S. versus FOP, where they talk about observations. They arrested a person, and the officer observed that he had a mustache and physical features at that time, which did not, and what they talk about in there is that it's not a but-for test. They did not, it was whether those observations were used to exploit an illegal arrest. And in this case, similarly...
I don't understand you. I mean, obviously, if you arrest a person illegally and you observe his mustache, then you testify that, you know, the criminal had a mustache, something like that, you're using information that you obtained illegally, aren't you?
But I think the question is, at least... in terms of why fruit of the poisonous tree should be suppressed is if we look not to a but-for, whereas meaning that you wouldn't have obtained that information but for the arrest, you need to look at whether that the information obtained was because you've exploited the illegal arrest, used the illegal arrest to get that information. And in this case, that's not what they were using the arrest for. It just happened to be something that they noticed what this person looked like.
Well, I don't understand. What if they just noticed he's holding a brick of cocaine in his hand? And
well,
they testify to that?
I suppose I would argue that there would be probable cause for the arrest in that case.
No. They arrest him illegally, and then they notice that they've arrested him illegally. They notice he's holding a brick of cocaine in his hand. You're saying they can't use the cocaine, obviously, in evidence. But you say they can testify that they saw it?
The way I would distinguish that is, and is talked about in the FOB case, is that, for instance, when I can't remember the case that they cite in FOB to this, they observe a person after they arrest, and he makes furtive and nervous gestures. And that was not allowed to come in because that itself, that evidence was incriminating. Whereas observations, subjective observations of
identification, is certainly incriminating.
In and of itself, it's not an incriminating. Where an action a person takes that the action itself you could deem has some criminal nature or tends to show somebody might have been involved in a criminal act, I would suggest is different, is distinguishable than just observations of a person in terms of their physical appearance. And on those, unless there's any other questions on those basis, we'd ask the court to affirm the judgment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Royce, does he have any time left?
My time's up.
2 minutes? Do you have anything further?
No.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel. Next case for argument is Darrow versus